The Charlie Kirk murder trial testimony this week was dramatic in a courtroom sense. Lance Twiggs, described as the suspect Tyler Robinson's roommate, testified that Robinson confessed to the killing 2 days after it happened and then wept and expressed regret. In court, that kind of testimony from someone close to the defendant carries significant weight. The combination of a reported confession and an emotional acknowledgement of the act's gravity makes this a significant development for the prosecution's case.
The Federal Reserve's appointment of Xbox CEO Sarah Bond to a jobs task force, announced just days after she announced 3,200 layoffs at Microsoft's gaming division, created an obvious optics problem that commentators noted immediately. Bond is a capable executive with relevant experience in large-scale workforce management, which may be exactly why the Fed found her useful for a task force examining labor markets. But the juxtaposition of cut 3,200 jobs on Tuesday, join a jobs task force on Friday, is the kind of thing that feeds directly into the 75% of Americans who told the WSJ that billionaires hold too much power in Washington.
Trump's 250-foot arch monument winning preliminary Federal Planning Commission approval is a story that seems minor, but connects to something real about how public spaces and civic symbols are contested. The design, by all accounts, is dramatic in scale. Whether it proceeds through full approval and construction will depend on further review, but the preliminary green light moves it meaningfully forward.
The San Jose federal judge ordering USCIS to resume work permit processing adds to a growing body of judicial decisions constraining the Trump administration's immigration enforcement posture. This particular ruling specifically affects people currently in the U.S. awaiting processing. The freeze on their cases was leaving people in genuine legal limbo, unable to work legally or travel. Courts have now intervened in several immigration freeze situations this year.
Now, the what if we're wrong exercise, and I want to pick the claim that has the most consensus around it right now. The IEA's projection that global oil demand will fall by 1 million barrels per day in 2026. The assumption underlying that number is that Strait of Hormuz disruptions continue at their current intensity through the rest of the year, sustaining the price signal that's destroying demand. But what if we're wrong about the durability of that disruption?
This is worth pushing on. The IEA's numbers are built on a scenario where the conflict doesn't resolve and the disruption persists. But the midterm calendar logic that Esper described actually cuts both ways. If Iran is racing to extract gains before November, that implies Tehran also has an interest in a deal before November. A deal locks in gains. If U.S.-Iran negotiations produce even a partial agreement that reopens the strait for, say, 60% of normal traffic, the demand destruction picture changes substantially.
Right. The strongest counterargument to the demand will fall consensus is that energy markets are extraordinarily adaptive. Alternative routing through longer sea lanes is already being established. Saudi Arabia and Israel's pipeline proposals, if they move quickly, could divert significant volume. If you add a partial diplomatic resolution to those physical workarounds, the supply constraint that's causing the demand destruction eases faster than the IEA's model assumes.
And there's a domestic U.S. production dimension. American shale producers respond to price signals relatively quickly. The break-even for many Permian Basin operations is well below current prices. A sustained high-price environment encourages faster U.S. production expansion, which doesn't restore Hormuz supply, but does change global balances.
What would we watch for as a signal that the consensus is wrong? I'd track two things specifically. First, any diplomatic communique from the U.S.-Iran talks that includes even vague language about strait access. That would indicate a deal framework is closer than the hawkish scenario assumes. Second, tanker insurance rates for the Gulf routes. If underwriters start pricing in lower risk through the summer, that precedes the physical resumption of traffic. Insurance markets price expectations before the news arrives.
That's the right way to watch it. Not the political statements, which will be managed, the insurance rates, because those are financial decisions with real money behind them.